information from another human.
Many of you may be surprised to hear my show tonight instead of on Tuesday, but this weekend is a blue moon, you know. It's funny how expressions are often heard and repeated with no understanding of what it originally meant. Things like, she does that once in a blue moon, or I've heard of that happening once in a blue moon. What is the blue moon? The blue moon is merely the second full moon in a calendar month, or is it? Sky and Telescope on the internet had a long article about the real origins of the blue moon, according to old copies of the Farmer's Almanac, and that was far more complicated than merely being the second full moon of a calendar month. I read the article twice, and granted, it was a late night read, but when I finished the second reading, I think it's the third full moon in a season with four moons rather than three. I'm going with the idea that more is better, so I'll enjoy both definitions as a blue moon myself. Now, some people do wonder about our fascination with the phases of the moon and of the sun, of our relationship with the seasons, our planet, with the trees and plants, with the animals, and doubt that there is even a relationship that matters with these things they regard of lesser stature in the scheme of things. Some people question the reality of mysticism, of spirituality, of the existence of things not measurable in some sterile laboratory. What do you think? Emotions, as far as I can tell, aren't really measurable either. Yet few would doubt the love of a parent for a child. The driest of scientists would have to admit that there is an unmeasurable bond between a loyal dog and his master, too. We all know someone who has a green thumb and can make gardens grow and produce in amazing ways. Others are amazing as they blend herbs and spices in the kitchen, creating dishes that have our mouths watering at merely a whiff of their aroma. Other people are like me and have a knack of working with animals. In my case, it's dogs. I have actually been accused on a number of occasions of using magic to manipulate them, and no explanation of the psychology of the canine mind would dissuade my accusers of their belief that I was using that magic to control them. Then we've all heard the stories of a police detective's hunch about a case, or a doctor's strange persistence at pursuing some obscure diagnosis on a feeling. None of these things are measurable, none are provable. We can't even reproduce the results in a laboratory. Does that mean they are just modern legends? Does it take away the validity of our observations? Does it make a bumper crop of garden vegetables or that amazing rose garden into a figment of our imagination? Sometimes I think science has turned into a dry religion of its own, discounting anything that does not fit its perceptions of the world we live in. It can be more narrow-minded than the most fundamental version of any traditional religion. It can be more restrictive and censoring than any church. And granted, they may not use the rack to ensure no heresy, but there is definite pressure to ensure conformity in the collective minds of the scientific community. Perhaps in the paranormal arena, otherwise known as the fringe lunatic region, we have a freedom that the so-called civilized and scientific world has given up. We can accept science as real and realize at the same time that there is much in our world that science has not even noticed, let alone explained and measured. We understand that the human experience is much more than test tubes and slide rules, and that magic can be created through ritual and desire. We can explore without the restrictions of having to prove it many times over to a doubting peer review group intent on preserving the status quo. Nobody is right and nobody is wrong, but we are all travelers in the same direction towards enlightenment. There are just many paths to get us there. Tonight, we are fortunate enough to have an amazing man with us as our guest to help us discuss and explore some of the possibilities that exist in our world, all too often out of our line of sight. Please welcome Michael Peter Landsman to the Dawn of Shades. Michael, can you hear me?
I sure can. Good to be on your show.
Well, I'm glad to have you back on the show. You are such a fascinating guest with so much under your belt that it would be easy to have you on the show for hours and hours.
I think.
Tonight, though, our intention is to focus on shamanism and its connection with extraterrestrials, a topic we barely touched on when you were on last time. Perhaps you could start off our audience, though, with a brief description of what a shaman is, as often it's the terms themselves that lead to misconceptions and confusion. I want to make sure that everyone in our audience can understand exactly what we're discussing this evening.
Well, I don't do concise well, but as to the point as I can say, before there were organized religions on the planet, ancient people who lived in tribes always had healers, always had those who spoke to the gods and goddesses, the divine force, the spirit in things for them. Now, still to this day, in many third world countries, there are healers and those who speak to the gods and goddesses and the spirits in all things, not in the organized religion way, but in a way of spirit. In your introduction, you spoke of many pathways to enlightenment, and I think shamanism is one of the oldest and most widely spread pre-religious spiritual pathway and way of healing.
Well, that's pretty good for not being too good at concise. Now, much of your research has been conducted in South America. Exactly which cultures have you focused on?
The Incas are my favorites. I've traveled a bit in the Amazon and in around the Lake Titicaca region. You have the Quechuan, who are the descendants of the Incas, and there are other groups that predated the Incas up and down Peru and into the Amazon basin. But most of them have their commonality with the Incas. And today, most of Latin America calls themselves Catholic. It's an interesting form of Catholicism, not one that I was raised on in New England, but one where there are, like voodoo and Santeria, there are the trappings of the Catholic Church that slightly overlay ancient beliefs and practices.
Okay. So, you know, it's like they've blended the, you know, that was common, I think, with Catholicism spreading to new places. They blended the old with the new to make it a little bit easier for the converts to adjust to.
Very much so. What happened in Peru, the Incan Empire, was that there was a clear effort on the missionaries' part to make it easier, even though it was somewhat forced, on the people to convert. What they said was, come, you worship Inti, the God of the Sun. Come to our churches and worship Jesus, the Son of God. You worship Pachamama, the Mother Earth. Come worship Mary, the Mother of God. So today, still, in churches not 30 miles from Cusco, where they have over 300,000 tourists a year, you can go in and hear High Mass said in Quechuan, which was the language of the Incas. You can see pictures of Inti and Pachamama and Pachamama, the moon goddess, along with many of the gods and goddesses of the Incan Empire on the sides of the church. You can see fertility rituals that were carried on 500 and 5,000 years ago in the Sacred Valley that is still performed, only now they're in Catholic churches.
That's interesting. Now, you know, you've gone back and forth between this very ancient sort of world and the modern society we have in the United States. Do you see modern society being able to accept and utilize the form of the shaman within it?
More and more in Europe and the United States, I won't say that people are moving away from organized religion because it's not a requirement. What it is the requirement is having an open mind with science, with organized religions, to a wider view of reality. In a lot of ways, if you as you mentioned in your introduction, science has become a religion of its own and has told people that if you can't touch it, feel it, or measure it in a laboratory, then it's not real. And yet most people know once or twice a week who's calling them before they pick up the phone. Most people have a feeling when a relative is about to die or has died. Most people have felt uncomfortable and the hair stand up in the back of their neck when they're at risk. None of these are defined by science. And they're just everyday examples of mysticism, where shamanism goes. More and more people are interested in what is the magic that exists around us, and what is it that science has not yet been able to measure, and how can we tap into that and utilize it to enhance our everyday life. I speak to audiences all over the country, all over the world, and I find that you can break the world into two camps. Those who could have a miracle happen right in front of their eyes and wouldn't believe it because they're so determined that their belief system is the only belief system that's valid, and those that are open to possibilities and to learning new ways. That second group is very open and interested, eager even, to discover what it is that shamanism has been in past history and what it does now in worlds or in parts of the world that most people don't visit on a regular basis.
You know, I know a lot of people who are interested in studying about becoming a shaman, and there are people on the internet who make all sorts of claims. How would someone find a legitimate and authentic place to study, and how would they even recognize a charlatan in the field?
For years, having been the publisher of Magical Blend magazine, besides doing lectures and workshops and writing the book, The Secret of the Ancient Incas, and the sequel to it, The Secret of the Amazon Shamans, I've been in a position that people have asked me these questions. I urge people to use their discretion. You can tell when you're signing up for a college course or an evening course whether the teacher knows where they're talking about or they've just taken a job. You can tell when you're taking a course if what you're being taught comes from a place that it has meaning to the person teaching it. It has meaning to you in your own life. I urge people who hear me on the radio or in lectures not to take everything I say as gospel, as the new truth or a new religion, but to try it out in their own lives. As you meet a new teacher, whether on the internet, you pick up a book, you go to a series of classes on shamanism or astrology or any of the plethora of subjects that the New Age has brought forth to the world, I urge people to use their discretion. See if it feels right. We all have an inner litmus paper that will tell us if we listen. And second, try them out slowly in your life and see if they make a difference. If something works for you, then it's wonderful. If it doesn't work for you, or if someone's charging huge sums of money and you're not sure what you're getting, then beware.
Yeah, I mean, you know, right there you're saying, you know, use that hunch.
Right.
Or that feeling, you know, that is indescribable, that's unmeasurable, to sort of, that's your litmus paper.
That's it exactly. I mean, when people, in our world today, we're taught to be victims and we're taught to be powerless. The media on so many levels, our school system, a lot of the jobs that we're given don't want people to be thinkers, creative, or empowered. If we can break through that and instead of being victims, realize that we have just access to an amazing array of spiritual abilities, and psychic abilities, and spiritual knowing and inner answers, if we just stop and listen to ourselves, people will be amazed at what they know if they don't just get caught up in something but stop and look at it some level of discretion and ask their inner self.
Yeah, exactly. Independent thinking is a wonderful thing. I don't care how many.
It's a lot of work, but it's well
worth
it.
Whatever else tell you it's a bad thing to have in your children, I think it's a wonderful thing. You know, to think independently, to not need someone to tell you how to think, how to feel, what to buy, how to spend your money, how to earn your money, etc.
I think it's the world we're moving towards. All of this trouble and turmoil that we're in now, I think is just to wake people up that the more they give their power away to politicians, to corporations, perhaps even to religious leaders, that they're not finding their own power, their own spiritual path, their own way in the world. And if they start asking questions, if they start thinking for themselves, if they start making their own decisions, in a lot of common sense ways, those are the basics that shamanism has dealt with throughout the centuries.
To think independently?
To think independently, to question, to observe, to know that reality is much more than we can perceive with our five senses, and to start opening yourself up to the input from other ways beyond that.
you know, that's, I think that's a great thing, you know, to be able to question and explore your world and find who you are within that in your own way, without someone holding your hand and leading you to a spot and saying, this is where you're supposed to be, and this is what you're supposed to do, and this is how it's supposed to be what you believe.
And it's hard for people who have done it. It's hard if you're in a job, if you're in a life of built up of habit where you're taking orders and where people have told you what to think and how to live. But people can experiment and try baby steps and start to see just how much better it is to create their own lives, to find their own power, to make their own decisions. And once you open the door, it's sort of like Alice in Wonderland. The worlds of possibility that open up are beyond our imagination.
You know, as a child growing up, I used to envy my friends who grew up, you know, knowing that they belonged to religion X and this is what they were supposed to believe and think and feel, because their lives were just laid out so simple for them. They didn't have to think about everything like, you know, I did. And now looking back, I'm thinking, you know what? I think I got off easy because I didn't have that blueprint that I was supposed to follow. And, you know, granted, you know, everything I believed, I had to come up on my own and I had to be able to defend on my own. You know, maybe it made me really think about what I chose to believe and chose not to believe.
Oh, very much so. I raised my children that way, and I know sometimes they resented me for it, because it's a lot easier if people just give you a guidebook and say, this is how reality is, and this is what you're supposed to do, and these are the do's and don'ts. But easy isn't always best. And in this case, we're talking about, you know, living in a cave versus living on a floating cloud castle. And that's the difference between having a handbook telling you do's and don'ts and all the limitations versus making up your own mind and having to explore and see what works for you and what brings the most happiness and the most meaning into your existence.
Yeah, and I think, too, as you're moving through life, if you didn't have that blueprint handed to you and you have had to think about it, perhaps it gives you the ability to be a little bit more open to new ideas, because if you can't defend a belief that you're holding, then you know that it might not be really all it has cracked up to be.
That's really the truth, and so often when I speak in public, people say to me, well, what proof do you have for these wild claims you make? And I basically say, just look at my life. You know, I've been blessed to live a life of miracles. I've gone where few people have gone. I've run a business that's changed people's lives all over the world. I've written books and built some renown doing that. And basically it's been not because I was handed these things as a child, but because I fell across a number of spiritual, shamanic, magical possibilities and have used them to transform my existence. And, you know, the proof, people can say whatever they want, but the proof is in the pudding. It's in what you do. It's in how you live. And if someone has a life that's fulfilling and touches other lives and helps to open up possibilities and inspire them, then it's got to be worth something.
Very true, very true. Now, what reasons would anyone have to make a spiritual journey or quest?
Well, you know, I go back to where you and I have talked of how we've chose to live. Most people aren't raised that way. Most people are told by their parents, one or both, what religion they will be raised in, and even their community, extended family, how things are done. I knew I was raised in New England, and very clearly, New England prides itself in doing things a certain way. Massachusetts was founded by the Puritans, and many of the things they do there to this day are based on the Puritan ethic and the Puritan way of being. For the majority of the people in the world, I say that they go on a spiritual quest. Whenever they go to their church, their mosque, their synagogue, they go on a spiritual quest. Whenever they pray, they go on a spiritual journey. And if in these prayers and if in these visiting to holy places, they open themselves up and just use the most open-ended thing, my prayer be answered or something better. Just use the prayer, thy will not mine, to the divine force that they pray to. All of a sudden, by leaving their rituals slightly more open, they'll be amazed at what will go on, what will open up for them. Beyond that, people who already have an open-minded approach to religion or are searching for their spiritual path, people would go on a spiritual journey or a spiritual quest because what you establish is reference points in other dimensions. In other, what you find is, as in any of the historical books that come out of Europe or any of the other cultures, China and Latin America, what you find is the holy quest, the quest for the Grail, where you become the hero and your life becomes transformed in doing the good works and seeking the higher meaning to existence.
Yeah, that's very true. Now, I've known a number of people who have studied shamanism, and I've heard about a place like a mystical realm where everyone is able to go on this spiritual journey through their shamanistic ritual, and that they go back to that same place when on similar journeys. That there's a single world where all humans go when they're on this quest. In your experience, do you think this is true?
No. I think there are certain reference points that are easier on spiritual journeys to get to, on shamanic journeys. I think in Latin American shamanic cultures, as with some of the North American, Native American shamanic cultures, hallucinogenic substances are used, generally natural ones, and some of these substances will bring you to a similar dimension, alternative spiritual dimension, if you will, similar astral plane, if you will. These are subjects that a lot of people don't talk about at length, but having tasted a number of different mystical traditions, having practiced with and studied with a number of different shamanic teachers from a number of different areas, and even experienced a number of different hallucinogenic substances, I think there are more spiritual dimensions that exist than we can describe. If we take our material world and what can be measured by our five senses and see that as just one of the colors in the rainbow, the rainbow goes beyond our sight in its level of colors that exist out there. There are astral planes and dimensions, higher and lower, of different vibrations, alternative universes, beyond our imagination that people can go to. There are some closer ones that vibrate closer to our material world, Earth plane, that are easier for people to get to. And probably the first level of the astral plane is the one that you spoke of that more people go to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's not a simple answer to a simple question.
Well, it's not necessarily a simple question. Now, one thing that many people have tried to explain to me, and I have to admit, I usually feel like I'm being told about the Emperor's New Clothes, is the other dimensions. I really cannot get my mind around this concept of other dimensions.
Okay, we've proven through science, we'll fall back on science to explain this, that light vibrates at a different frequency than sound. Sound vibrates at a different frequency than magnetism, which vibrates at a different frequency than a rock. If you use these as symbolic of other dimensions, as you raise the vibration what you have is either a higher or lower, just for use of a different term, other dimensions, where all the rules are different, where they're not necessarily material. They exist as simple as, in many religions, you have life after death, and whether that's in the Christian religion, heaven, hell, the Catholics add purgatory to that, and each of those, where do they exist? The center of the earth, up in the clouds? Those, to me, are symbolic of other dimensions, where people can go, where beings exist that isn't in our material plane, and yet, and our senses perceive differently, and things function differently. Was that more confusing or less?
Well, you know, maybe I'm beginning to get, you know, the idea that, you know, the different vibrations, because I do understand the difference between sound and light and a rock and,
right,
you know, whatnot. Those are very simple, you know, tangible concepts. So I guess, you know, switching it to our entire reality vibrating at a different frequency, it would put you in an alternate dimension. It's starting to make sense.
When people dream, not all the time, because there's levels and levels and levels to dreams, but when people dream, sometimes they go to an astral plane. They're part of their perception, part of their soul, part of their spirit separates out, and they might visit the school that they went to that day, or the workplace they went to, or their grandmother's house.
Okay, I hate to interrupt you, but we got to go to a break.
That's okay.
So we're going to go to a break, folks, and please stay tuned to the Dawn of Shades with Michael Lindzen. We will be right back.
Questions about everything? Would you like to escape from your proverbial box? Just leap out and explore our world in ways you've never imagined? You can have that opportunity. As we grow and expand, new features will be added, allowing you to experience radio programming at a fresh new level. I invite you to join me, November Hansen, host of Voice of the People. Together, we can expand our horizons and peer into multifaceted possibilities. This program will broadcast live Saturday evenings on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hi, this is James Arthur Janczyk, the Black Knight of Talk Radio, inviting you to join me on a road to truth via the path of non-contradiction. Join us each week on Feet to the Fire, a show with the goals of examining a subject matter on its own merits and test how it stands up to the many possibilities found in reality, all without pre-drawn conclusions found in personal bias. No left or right wings here. No pounding the pulpit of ego-driven my way or the highway attitudes. But there are no free passes given either. Answers to questions are important, but equally important is the reasons and methods used to find the answer. The lack of contradiction is the final judge here. On Feet to the Fire. Sunday evenings. Live. How do you listen? www.feettofire.com for more information.
Welcome back to the Dawn of Shades. I'm your host, Gia Scott, and this evening we are talking with Michael Peter Landsman. Our topic tonight is shamans and extraterrestrials. And where were we, Michael?
We were talking about the different dimensions in the astral planes. The great thing is that anyone who wants to do their homework, and the internet makes it so easy now, can research and they're explained in depth from the ancient Sanskrit writings in northern India, to Russian writings, to Chinese writings, throughout history, people have described these. But on a simple level, we were talking about how most people dream. Not all people can remember their dreams, but most people dream, and that some of these dreams people rehash today. And in truth, some of those times, and not all of the time for sure, people go back to where they were during the day, whether it's their school or work or a relative's house. And when they wake up, they say, they remember, gee, it was funny because this person from my early childhood was there in my workplace. Or there was a suit of armor in my grandmother's house, and there's no suit of armor. It's those moments that people have a reference point that they were actually on the astral plane are likely, because the first astral plane that we visit in dreams is much like the material plane, yet thought forms exist there because someone gave them strong energy, or symbolism can be given to us on almost a spiritual realm, so that it's much like our workplace, but there's something there that you wouldn't see on a normal day. These exist, and with some attention, by telling yourself you're going to go someplace in the astral or in your dream, and you're going to remember it when you wake up, and by telling yourself that maybe 9 times a day, 3 times in the morning with breakfast and lunch and supper, then as soon as you wake up, writing them down, so many times people will start remembering more and more detail, and then they'll start remembering that they saw more vibrant colors, or that they heard sounds they had never heard before. And this is one simple way that people can actually establish reference points in the astral planes and start developing the ability to what's called by many mystics astral travel, or have lucid dreams.
Okay, so, you know, this sounds like a really fascinating thing. A lot of people are really all about what's practical in the application to their life. By doing this, by becoming more familiar with the astral plane and navigating it more comfortably, being able to go where you want to, and sort of control the dream experience, how would this help them in their life?
As diverse as being able to go to the sick bed of someone you care about who you can't take time off to work to see, and send healing energy to them in the evening. The shepherds in some Andean villages use it to find lost llamas and sheep in the mountains. You can use it to find information, to check on people you've lost touch with or loved ones. The list goes on and on. I mean, it's almost a superpower out of a comic book if people want to take the time to develop it.
Like when I say, okay, let me sleep on that.
Exactly.
I'll often say that when I have a problem. Say I can't figure out how to fix something or how to deal with a situation. I'll say, let me sleep on it, and I'll tell you tomorrow, or I'll fix it tomorrow, or I'll deal with it tomorrow, whatever. And in my sleep, what I'll do is I will try out sometimes 100 different scenarios. I wake up very tired the next day, but I have found a solution.
And in that, in the beginning stages, and that's a perfect analogy, you can refine that so that you can add to it, I'm going to sleep on it, I'm going to find the answer, and I'm going to wake up more refreshed than usual, or I'm going to go to to find a spiritual teacher or an expert in that area who's going to help me find the answer, and I'll find it easily and remember it clearly in the morning. That level of control can be developed.
I never thought about using it in terms of spiritual answers. For me, it was usually, I've got a broken faucet, the barn's falling down, or, I need to get to point A, and I can't get there because the bridge is broke, or whatever, some physical world issue that I needed to deal with.
And spirituality and shamanism are only good if they're practical. Throughout history, shamans have found the cure for sickness, found the way to help the rains to come, to help crops to grow when they weren't growing, to fend off attacks from unfriendly villages nearby. If spirituality doesn't work in our day-to-day, if we can't find practical answers, then what good is it? We can say
that. You really do have a point, because we are kind of a practical, physical species.
We are very much. Religions have existed for the promise of the hereafter for centuries, but they too talk about praying for what you need now. And in truth, alternative spiritual paths make that as easy, to the degree of going to experts on plumbing. When you're having a drippy sink in your dreams and being clear on how to fix it in the morning, I've had computer problems and I go in and out of being okay to middling on electronics, and I've slept on them and asked to be guided by people who have passed over that were excellent at electronics and woken up and known exactly what to do with my computer.
I guess I didn't ask for specific guidance, but I must have found it somewhere because, like I said, I would try out these scenarios, and I'm like, well, this didn't work, And sometimes it'd be with, personal relationships. So I was having a conflict with somebody, and I was trying to find a solution, and
try out
these things, and then some of them just made things worse. Some didn't do any good. And then you found the one that worked the best.
And most of us do that to different degrees. It's about intention and expectation and building on successes. You know this works for you. It might leave you exhausted in the morning, but it works for you. So you've used it as a tool. People who want to can refine that and develop it and play with it even to make it more fun, more fulfilling, more recharging, more effective, and just take the scariness out of the fact that they have access. There are those who believe, I among them, that all knowledge that's existed throughout history sort of floats on a plane around the Earth on some vibrational dimension, and we have access to all of that if we just find the ways to access that information and get those answers.
Yeah, I'm switching our focus a little bit. What are these traditional shamans that you've dealt with? Do they have anything to do with extraterrestrials?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that's switching a lot. And yes, without a doubt, In Latin America, I'd say extraterrestrials are much more accepted. I think the governments in general historically have been much less trusted than the U.S. government, and that might not be recent history, and we won't get into politics, but historically, Latin American governments haven't been trusted anyway. So when Latin American governments deny that there's UFOs or extraterrestrials, the common folks say, of course they say that, and that has nothing to do with reality. And Uncle Joe saw UFOs, or UFOs fly over our village all the time, or we've had extraterrestrials walk through our village and teach our children. Time and time again, traveling in Latin America, you talk to people, you see things that you don't see here, and you experience things that you don't experience here if you get off the beaten tourist tracks, and you hear stories that are phenomenal. I think last time I was on, I told one of my favorite stories of meeting with a shaman in the Amazon basin. I think it was French Guiana, perhaps. I was asking him, usually what I would do is get an introduction or directions from someone who a shaman respected or who had studied with them, and then go there and introduce myself as a friend of and ask if I could study with them for some period of time. This fellow was kind of old and kind of crazed and kind of hesitant, and I was asking him all these questions, and he was sort of, you know, yeah, one-word answers. And then finally he said, "So you want to know about UFOs and extraterrestrials?" And I said, "Yes, very much so." And he said, "We had one crash in the river down there not long ago." I said, "Well, where is it?" He said, "Well, it's a river. It washed it away." And I said, "So you don't have any part of it or anything? What did it look like?" And he said, I don't know what it looked like, but we did fish one of the bodies out of the river." And I said, "Where is it?" He said, "This is the Amazon. Everything rots here." And I said, "Oh, so did you bury it? Are there bones?" And he said, "No, we don't waste much here. We boiled it and I ate it." And I said, "What?" And he said, and it was more intense than the most intense hallucinogenic I had ever done. And for days I was tasting colors and seeing sounds and hearing tastes. And if I didn't have a good apprentice, I don't think I would have lived through it or ever come out anywhere sane at the other end. And what I realized when I did come out the other end is just that their whole perception of reality is so different that it's in their cells, and that when I took in the meat of their bodies, those cells had to be integrated into my cells, and their perceptions altered and expanded my perceptions for the rest of my existence.
That's kind of amazing in a way. You know, there is a long tradition about, you know, if you ate the body of someone you respected or that was your enemy, that you took on their strength.
In parts of the Amazon, again, because of the rotting and because there's been so much warfare for centuries, what they do is they actually have a fire where they cremate their relatives, and then the ashes are scooped up in a gourd and a liquid is added to them, and the families and close friends drink the ashes of their relatives so that they'll always have their essence with them.
That's interesting.
It's a way of life. Very yeah. Different way of life, as is much of what still exists down there. It's changing fast, but a lot of the old ways are still hidden in the nooks and crannies.
So obviously the extraterrestrials have contact in the physical world. Do they also have contact with these shamans in the mystical realm?
Yes. There's a lot of... And again, have you ever heard of the scientist Jacques Vallée? I interviewed him a number of years ago for Magical Blend magazine, and he spoke of how we try to define UFOs and extraterrestrials fully by our material world, five world senses. And then he went on to say, and if they have anti-gravity and faster than light flying ships, what makes us think that anything else about them would conform to our reality? that perhaps they exist, going back to our earlier conversation, partially in other dimensions. And a lot of the shamans speak about that there are beings who exist on other planets in our universe who travel here sometimes in faster than light spaceships, and other times through the astral plane, and that there's a conversations that go on between the cultures where they want to expand their understanding by what we have, and some of them are so advanced that they want to teach our open-minded spiritual leaders or teachers on these astral planes so that they can help humanity make the transition to a better existence.
So these extraterrestrials, do they tell these shamans things? Do they give them messages, warnings, prophecies? I mean, what do they tell them? What do they talk about?
Well,
how do they teach?
Well, the wonderful thing about Latin America is finding two shamans or spiritual teachers that fully agree is a challenge.
Well, I bet.
It's one of the things that I love about it, and it's one of the things I laugh about. The many of the people who do come back talk of the chaos of Latin America, and it's part of its sadness, and it's part of its richness. That there's a understanding that life in itself and the celebration of each moment down there is important, and there's a tradition of storytelling that makes one have to listen with discretion to find out what's really being said and what's real versus exaggerated. But I've heard a number of stories from a number of different shamanic and wise elders who speak of beings from other dimensions and other planets, both warning and teaching of our future. That's probably the most predominant, but also available and wanting to instruct shamans on how to do better what they do, or how to make the next step in their tradition, or how to even keep their tradition alive with more validity.
Uh-huh. You know, it's kind of mind-boggling, you know, to think of these very primitive people talking with extraterrestrial entities that are capable of intergalactic space travel faster than light, you know, and it's some sort of strange contradiction, really.
I can't think of the name of the probe that we sent out of the solar system that was in hopes of communicating with other civilizations. But we sent it out a decade or so back, and what we did was we broke down our languages to mathematics and to sound, and tried to make basic hellos. We live here on this planet, in this solar system. These are some of our basic knowledges and truths. And I see the analogy as, who would they better speak to than those who are in close contact with the planet itself, those who are living not caught up in the spell of materialism and greed, but who live close to the earth and close to their extended families and for the purpose of serving their village. Who better for them to speak to?
You have a point there. There's also been some speculation that at some point in our future, we will all be part of a society much closer to our planet, and instead of relying as much on technology, it will be more on a symbiotic relationship with our own world.
I having worked with shamans, I make a clear point of saying that I'm not a shaman, and I'm hardly a prophet or one who dares make predictions, because whenever I think I know what's going to happen, it's usually 180 degrees different than that. It does come to be, but I've been experienced personally visions where I see a world that evolves, that humanity develops whole new systems where our economy, our religions, our politics all serve to to expand and explore the potentials of each human being, where our education system helps develop each person's talents and abilities and at their own pace and find their own creative expression and spiritual expression, and where all this is done, as you said, symbiotically with nature, so that we're supporting nature and we're appreciating nature rather than trying to conquer it or carelessly destroy it in our march towards having more dollars and more material possessions.
A lot of times it sounds like some form of utopia now as we deal with things like pollution and gas shortages and long commutes as we sit in slow-moving traffic and so forth and so on.
I'm not sure who it was that said the darkest, as with an R, because I am from Boston and my R's always do right, the darkest hour is before the dawn. I think that we're living in a time and that the next, you know, 5 to 10 years might even get worse, but it's a time when humanity is going to be pushed to their limit so that we can find our truest strength and what's most important to us, and we can together as a unit of individuals stand up and create something that by our standards now resembles a utopian society. It'll still have challenges, it'll still have its shortcomings, and humans will still have their weaknesses and their blind spots, but they'll be on such a higher level than we now live at, that by our standards today, I think there will be a utopia on the planet.
It would certainly be nice because, you know, I'm sure I'm not the only one in the world that says, you know, my first part of the day is not spent sitting sniffing exhaust fumes from the 100 cars surrounding me.
Exactly, and I think it's, you know, I, again, not to get into politics too deeply, but I think I try to make myself say thank you for George Bush and Dick Cheney, because I don't know that they have the average human being on the planet or nature as their highest interest. And I think they're pushing us to a place where people are starting to question, just like many of the international corporations are pushing humans to a level where they're trying to program them as to what they have to buy and what they have to do in order to find happiness, rather than encouraging each individual to find those own answers. And I think when humans are pushed to their limit, that you will say no to the exhaust, no to the pollution, no to the greed, no to material possessions that don't fill the empty space in our lives. When you go to Latin America, one of the reasons I go back as often as I can and plan to move down there is sometime here in the next 5 to 10 years, is people understand. A lot of the children don't live to be baptized at 2 years old. A lot of the children are never named until their baptism because they might not live that long. And when you live with death that close, you understand how important life is. And it's not about what you own as much as about when somebody asks you how you're doing, that you tell them and you stop and you have a real conversation about what's important to them and what's important to you. That when you live down there for 2 to 4 months and you go to the marketplace and you ask somebody what this vegetable is, they ask you where you live and say, can I come over tonight and show you how to best prepare it? And then they come over with a family member or two and you share a dinner and some local beer and you talk until morning, sharing stories of your lives and your families and your experiences and you consider them friends that you'll keep in touch with for the rest of your lives. This to me is understanding what's important to life and what we in the Western world, the United States and many parts of Europe, nowadays in Japan and parts of China, have really forgotten in our rush towards earning and achieving and impressing.
You know, in this day and age, most of us don't work to live. We live to work. We're simply cogs on a wheel. And you look at your life and you realize this, and even if you go to a mall or someplace like that, and you sit and you watch people, it's like there's two kinds. You know, maybe I doubt your vision of the world to come, because sometimes I'm certain
planet is evolving, the people are evolving into two different species. There's the people with open minds that are questioning and thinking and looking for something more, and then there's the sheeple who have accepted the program as their own reality, and they live to work and consume.
There, you might be right. I met one elder down in Bolivia, and what he said was that he felt that Beta Concha, the creator god of the Incas, was going to come back, and that he really didn't care how many humans went with him into a higher creative earth where their dreams could be realized, and how many had to go back to do it all over again, and that each human, with every decision they were making, each moment of their life, was deciding whether they were going to go into a better future with Beta Concha, or whether they were going to go in to go back and do it all over again. That to the gods and goddesses, time it doesn't exist, so that it really doesn't matter to them what we decide to do, but that each of us is making a choice, and that's what we were born in these lives at this time, and that's why there's more people alive on the planet than ever before, because we get to decide in this life how we want to live and how we want our children and grandchildren to live.
And that brings us to the question I'm often asked. Is the world really going to end in 2012? But right now it is time for a break. So everyone, please stay tuned. The Dawn of Shades with Michael Langevin will be right back after this break.
Now you shouldn't be scared, I'm good at repairs, and I'm under each snare, intangible. Bet you didn't think, so I command you to panoramic view. Look, I'll make it all manageable. Pick and choose, sit and lose, all you different crews, chicks and dudes, who you think is really kicking tunes. Picture you getting down in a pit of tunes, like you lit the fuse. You think it's fictional, mystical, maybe spiritual. Hero who appears in you to clear your view when you're too crazy. Lifeless, to those the definition for what life is. Priceless to you because I put you on the high shit and like it. Gun smoke, you're righteous with one tongue, the psychic among them, possess you with one go.
Feeling glad I got sunshine in a bag, I'm useless. Not for long, the future is coming on. I'm feeling glad I got sunshine in a bag, I'm useless. Not for long, the future is coming on. It's coming on, it's coming on, it's coming on, it's coming on.
Since the basics, without it you make it. Allow me to make this child like your nature. Rhythm, you have it or you don't, that's a fallacy, I'm in them. Every sprouting tree, every child of peace, every cloud and sea. You see with your eyes, I see destruction and demise. Corruption in the skies, from the enterprise. Now I'm sucked into your lives through rustle. Not in trouble, but profession you provide. For me it's a guide. Y'all can see me now cause you don't see with your eye. You perceive with your mind, that's the end. So I'ma stick around with Russ and be a mentor. Bust a few rhymes of muggles with a remember what the thought is. I brought all this so you can survive when law is lawless. Feeling sensations that you thought was dead. No squealing, remember that it's all in your head.
I ain't happy, I'm feeling glad I got sunshine. In a bag, I'm useless. Not for long, the future is coming up.
Universe, we invite you to set your perspective aside for a moment and join us on a refreshing journey into aspects of your universe that you may not have noticed from your particular point of view. Let host Jason Wilson be your guide into the corners of the universe you've never peeked into before. Who knows, you may just enjoy it and end up coming back for more. Take a stroll into the Unabridged Universe, live Saturdays from 7 to 9 Central Standard Time. Only on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Light up your night with The Kevin Smith Show. Hi, this is Kevin Smith. Join me Monday through Friday right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Do you like to ask questions about everything? Would you like to escape from your proverbial box? Just leap out and explore our world in ways you've never imagined? You can have that opportunity. As we grow and expand, new features will be added, allowing you to experience radio programming at a fresh new level. I invite you to join me, November Hansen, host of Voice of the People. Together, we can expand our horizons and peer into multifaceted possibilities. This program will broadcast live Saturday evenings on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hi, this is James Atha Yanchik, the Black Knight of Talk Radio, inviting you to join me on a road to truth via the path of non-contradiction. Join us each week on Feet to the Fire, a show with the goals of examining a subject matter on its own merits and test how it stands up to the many possibilities found in reality, all without pre-drawn conclusions found in personal bias. No left or right wings here. No pounding the pulpit of ego-driven my way or the highway attitudes. But there are no free passes given either. Answers to questions are important, but equally important is the reasons and methods used to find the answer. The lack of contradiction is the final judge here. On Feet to the Fire, Sunday evenings, live. How do you listen? www.feettofire.com for more information.
What would you do if you knew all the things we know? Would you stand up for truth? Or would you turn away to?
Get your dose of truth with the Truth Hurts Radio Show with your host Charles Giuliani, Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. The truth hurts, ignorance kills.
What would you do?
To UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Dawn of Shades. I'm your host, Gia Scott, and this evening we are talking with Michael Peter Landrum.
Our topic tonight is shamans and extraterrestrials, and the bombshell question I dropped on you just before the break was, is the world all going to end in 2012?
And I think the answer is yes and no, in that I think the world as we know it doesn't exist anymore from the world that I knew 20 years ago. I think the world in 2012, I believe, is it December 12th? And the Mayan calendar even ends at a certain hour, and I should know that. I think that the Mayans, like the Incas, were privy to knowledge far beyond what we are on the spiritual levels, and that their calendar is extremely symbolic and real at the same time, of that what they say is the fifth world is going to end at that time. So do I think we're going to wake up and by the 30th of December 2012 the earth is gone? No. Do I think it'll be the biblical apocalypse? No. Do I think that almost all the systems that we now take for granted will be transformed, give or take, a year from that date? Probably. That world we talked about splitting maybe into symbolically or in the real world two Earths, where those who decide to live under the spell of materialism and to go back and relearn the lessons of spirit and how to find their own power and how to find their own meaning will have many lives to reincarnate on an earth similar to the one that's evolved throughout our history. And those who have decided to find, to risk and to push their level and to become more and to make up their own minds and to raise their vibrations will enter into that utopia world that we talked about. Very much so. I've being the publisher and managing editor of Magical Blend magazine over the last almost three decades, I've gotten to interview a number of amazing people besides shamans. Terence McKenna believed that on that date that time travel would be allowed. Marilyn Tanishende, who studied with Carlos Castaneda, said that on that day the Earth would split in two and Quetzalcoatl, the winged serpent, would return and take those who are ready into a better world. Robert Anton Wilson said that the Anunnaki would return. The number of brilliant people who have impressed me to no end, who have predicted something wild is going to happen either on that date or near to that date, are countless.
Well, even within the United States, the Hopis have this story about, well, not necessarily the date, but that things will come and people will leave this world and go to the next world.
Very much so. There's a talk of how does it go? A time after humans have walked on the moon, the eagle has walked on the moon, and humans have walked on the moon, after a time when the Hopi people have spoken at the main place of world's leaders, which was the UN, and they spoke. A number of prophecies have come to pass, which will be a time that the world as we know it will end, and a new world will be born. There was a wonderful book called Excuse Me, Your Life is on Hold. Oh, and her name is escaping me. Lynn Grabhan was the author. She's dead now. And that first book was wonderful for people who are at the beginning stages of questioning their reality and their life, and how to find more meaning in it. Her later books went on to talk about pretty far out images of the world just splitting into two Earths, and that we had a choice which one we were going to hop aboard. depending on what quality of questioning and risk we were willing to live.
Now, there has been a lot of discussion and speculation that the common interpretation that the world's going to end at in 2012 isn't correct, but it indicated the end of an era and the beginning of another.
That's my interpretation. I think the world as we know it is on its way out, that the systems that we believe and expect to exist, just like the Iron Curtain crumbled in our lives, just like we just had the president of Vietnam to the White House, things that we never thought would happen are going to happen at an accelerated pace over the next 5 years, and systems that we thought would always exist, the capitalist system, the corporate world, on and on and on, will change so radically that they either won't exist, they'll fall away, or they'll adapt to become whole different systems. I think that's very much what this end of this world means. But, you know, if you talk to a number of your fundamentalists, they really like the apocalypse and the end of the world and the return of God and the ascension of the chosen.
Well, you know, a lot of people have heard about the end of the world is coming since, you know, the dawn of time, practically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every
we sure
everything that could be interpreted as an omen of the end of the world has been interpreted as such. And we've seen many of them in our own lifetime,
the YTK, and so forth
and so on. But at the same time, you know, my personal observation has been over the last year, there's been a dramatic increase in, you might say, spiritualism. You know, it's separate from religion. I mean, it does occur within religion, but it's not just about religion. The people are really exploring their spiritual self, that there's more spiritual activities going on, and you know, just really an increase in that sort of energy.
People know that what exists is changing. They know that shopping at Walmart doesn't fill their needs. They know that watching TV all their spare time, or playing video games, or going to porn sites on the internet doesn't fill all of their needs. They want to know more. They want to touch into higher truth. They feel a calling. And I think that we're just going to see people, more and more people, waking up and questioning on a multitude of levels and spiritual possibilities, their own potentials as beings, so much so.
Now, in your experience with these shamans that you've studied with and interviewed and whatnot, you know, have they issued any prophecies about, you know, sort of an end of the world sort of thing?
Yeah, I've met a couple that believed very thoroughly it was the end of the world coming. I met others who spoke of a time when humans will walk through the cracks of time. What would happen if our whole definition of time changed so that clocks and calendars became invalid? And I mean, my mind can't even wrap around that. I've met others who just speak of the number of species that are disappearing because they feel they're going into a better world where we will join them.
All those missing bees, it's been so much discussion
about
here lately.
Yeah, very much so. Icebergs that have existed and glaciers for throughout history are disappearing on the Andy Mountains. Parts of the Amazon jungle where there were no vampire bats, there are now vampire bats. Where there were no malaria, there's now malaria. Where things are, climate change is taking place. Places that used to be wet are dry. Places that used to be dry are wet. There's changes happening so much, so observable in the Amazon basin. If we look at the Earth as an organism, we can look at the Amazon basin as the lungs of the planet, and we're killing those lungs right now. What will that do to our future?
And there's discussion, too, that, you know, in the Arctic, entire lakes have just vanished, you know, in the blink of an eye.
Oh,
you get up in the morning and they're gone.
The Arctic and the Antarctic, huge icebergs have floated off and are melting. We don't know, and our friends in Washington won't agree exactly that climate change is happening, that the Earth is undergoing radical change, and that you know, in our lifetimes, the coastal cities of the world could all flood if this melting continues.
Well, that's kind of real relevant to me since I live in New Orleans.
Yeah. I guess you've already seen a certain touch of that, haven't you?
Yeah. You know, people talk about more intense storms and whatnot, and you know,
you
but
hope
I
it
didn't,
doesn't happen
I
to
didn't
you.
Stay here for Katrina, but you know, I now know I would not want to either. You know, storms are intense, and you know, flooding is a very real thing, and climate change is a very real thing. New Orleans is sinking, and the water is rising. That doesn't make a real good equation right there.
Well, it's almost ironic that Texas has had more floods in the past 7 years than they've ever had throughout history. While their man is in Washington.
Yeah, and you know, we're seeing more intense wildfires in the West. And, you know, lots and lots of things that are just saying, you know, we really need to reevaluate what's going on around us and how we're going to cope with it and interact with it and deal with it and adapt to it.
A few years back, Magical Blair Magazine asked a number of our, what we felt were more tuned in authors that had written for the magazine, Barbara Hancloud, Robert Anton Wilson, Gene Houston, Neil Donald Walsh, just a number of well-known and not well-known people, to write about if the world was going to change radically and quickly, how people could stay centered and how they could prosper as these changes come down. We called the book Solstice Shift, and we all started writing it on the solstice of the year before it was published, the summer solstice. And I was amazed that each chapter from each person had threads of commonality, that if people take time and set time apart every day to do a spiritual practice, it almost doesn't matter what spiritual practice. They can pray, they can meditate, they can do ritual, they can go to a religious place. If they explore their creative expressions, if they get clear on their personal goals, if they get clear on what people are important to them and who they really love and express that regularly, these kind of things, they get clear on their exercise program, diet, that the world can fall apart around them, but they'll have bedrock to stand on as it does. And to me, that was just such a wonderful experience, helping bring that book together and seeing all these people bring forth all this information that people, you know, I mean, it's a truism at this point, but in Mandarin, disaster and opportunity are the same word. And I think that's true in all things. It's all about how we keep our head when all around us is falling apart and what we decide to make happen because of that.
You know, and being aware of yourself is a great help when you're dealing with a disaster. You know, granted, you know, I was not one of the people that lost everything with Katrina.
You should do a show where you just talk about, not that it hasn't been done, but if you talked about it from a spiritual level on how people dealt with it and what they got out of it.
Yeah, because it did. It really made me think about what was important to me, because there was a period of time where I didn't know if I had a reason to come back, if I would ever have a reason to come back. You know, I didn't know anything. You know, because the media is telling you that everything's gone.
Right.
And so you're standing there, and all of a sudden you're dealing with the fact that you're homeless, jobless, in a strange place, and you don't know what's next. And if you don't know who you are, at that moment in time, you lost everything that you've connected with in the past. You could really be afloat in a very, very frightening world.
And the media did on their behalf, and I don't defend the media that often, even though I worked in it for years. They did depict, of course, the most sad cases, but the number of people who went into depression, who went into insanity because they didn't know who they were and because everything that they had taken for granted was gone, and everyone they loved had either vanished, moved away, or died.
Well, you know, in a sense, locally, we still deal with that, and there was recently an article in the local newspaper about it that, you know, the personal observation was that there was an increase in the death rate of elder people, increased suicides, et cetera, whereas official statistics said no, and the defense was that some of these people were dying in other areas and were not being immediately related to New Orleans and the Katrina experience itself, but it was still, and part of the aftermath is the people were dislocated from their homes, they were dislocated from their lives, and couldn't cope. And, you know, in the case of elders, often just gave up and died.
And
other people committed suicide.
And I think there's a few lessons there. One is that we have to become clear on what our own meaning is in life and what is important to us. And really, I mean, again, it's a truism, but if today was the last day you were going to be alive, what would you do? Because that tells you so quickly what is important to you and what you're not doing that you want to do. And the second one is that the media very much on many levels, and I hate to sound like a conspiratorial kind of fellow, but it now serves the corporations and the politicians and doesn't serve the people. I've been at a number of events that I've, a good and bad, that I've then seen depicted in the media, and usually you can't even recognize them because the media has put on such a spin, depending on either who's advertising or who owns the company, that the media no longer serves us as a true deliverer of truth.
Well, you know, many of us have had personal experience with being involved in an event that was covered by one form or another of the media, and even this show itself is a form of the media. But we've seen, you know, we saw what happened, we were involved in what happened, and then we read or saw the report on what had happened, and oftentimes you really couldn't believe it was an event.
Exactly. I mean, years ago, for me, black and white, I was waiting in line in San Francisco for the King Tut exhibition that they had paid tons of money to bring to San Francisco, and were really, the city was in a place that they were depending on the tourist money that was coming in to replenish the till for what they had paid to get it there. Somebody was shot, not five people in front of the line that I was waiting in, and they died. They were taken away in an ambulance. But the fellow who was putting them in the ambulance pretty much said they were dead. That never appeared on TV, radio, or in the newspaper because it would have stopped people from going to the King Tut exhibition. To me, that was just a black and white example of what the media does in depicting the news.
Yeah, you know, just like the CDC and other entities are saying, no, there is no increase in death rate for Katrina people.
And
personal observations saying, you know, we've got an awful long list of funeral announcements every week.
Exactly. And we started talking about shamanism and UFOs. Okay, if we go at it from the same place, if indeed knowing from shamanism's perspective that people can gain power by spending time in nature, by doing ritual, by getting in touch with their inner knowing, knowing that UFOs exist and that they blow off all of our concepts of what reality exists of, wouldn't it be to the politicians, corporations, even religious leaders' benefit to hide this information and to make anyone who believes in this information seem like the lunatic fringe?
Exactly. And, you know, I've realized that it really doesn't take much to really damage credibility in an area. So often you'll see it, you know, a legitimate series of observations or a discussion or whatnot, and then it's hit by one nut case or apparent nut case that just rattles off gobbledygook, and all of a sudden everybody is tarred with that same brush of being a nut, even though it's not true.
Very much so, and it's a case of that works just the opposite in other areas. Being in Latin America and observing and studying the history and the past, our colleges and our institutions that finance archaeology and anthropological research in ancient areas very clearly have their image of how they want it interpreted. And carbon dating is really a very unexact science, but they use it to and they use it to accept and reject a certain number of timelines and a number of interpretations of history because it fits what they want us to believe. You can make a case, and we're going down that street pretty quickly, that if we knew the real past, we'd know some of what humanities and cultures are capable of creating, and again, that would set humanity free and empower them in ways that it would be harder to control them.
Very true. But now it is time for another break. So everyone, please stay tuned to the Dawn of Shades with Michael Landerman, and we will be right back.
Thank you. Let me tell you, brother, she's been sleeping in the devil's bed. There's some rumors going around. Someone's on the ground. She can lock you in the night until your skin turns red.
Radio show with your host Charles Giuliani, Mondays 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. The truth hurts, ignorance kills.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Dawn of Shades. I am your host, Gia Scott, and this evening we are talking with Michael Peter Landrian. Our topic tonight has been shamans and extraterrestrials, and we're going to go over some shamanistic ritual stuff. Michael, you know, one of the things that a lot of people are so curious about, and there's been, you know, some, I guess you might say, doubting of the validity of the experience because of the use of various plants and herbs and whatnot in the shamanistic rituals. What can you tell us about their use and their purpose?
Well, we only have a half an hour, so
right.
I can't do it justice. But what I like to start out to say is just that substances, alternative substances, have been used since the dawn of time by spiritual teachers, spiritual explorers, religious leaders. Wine is still used in Christianity. Substances have been used throughout, and it's out of respect that I first used plant substances with shamans, because I felt that if this was their tradition, I wanted to learn and experience their tradition so I could make up my own mind what I thought. I realized in the American culture in the 21st century, Nancy Reagan probably had the most effect when it comes to drugs, just say no. Was a black and white answer, and that anyone who did drugs was either evil or crazy. I like to think I'm neither. I'll let your listeners decide on that, but I've been blessed or cursed, whatever they decide, to use a wide array of alternative substances and experience many altered states with many shamanic teachers and people who I had no doubt were some of the most wise and spiritual people that exist on the planet, or that I've been able to meet, and I've met quite an array of people. What these substances can do when used properly, especially years of ancient traditions, is they can allow you to see beyond our limited five senses, to perceive, to experience, to set up reference points on spiritual planes, on those astral and other dimensional planes that we spoke of, whether it's peyote, ayahuasca, psilocybin, Yahweh, Hembane,
the list goes on and on, huh?
The list goes on and on, and I'm mumbling with it, but whatever the substance is, each one of them can bring you to a place, introduce you to beings or experiences, and you can find your way back to them, whether in lucid dreams or in meditative states, and you can find spiritual allies, spiritual tools, or perform what amount of miracles in these altered states under the right tutelage, under the right experiences. Well, and anyone who wants to dismiss them, I say they're lessening their own world. Anyone who wants to use them just recreational or as an escape, like they do getting too drunk on weekends, I say stay away from them.
You know, I would think, and I've been told that sometimes altering one's state of consciousness is an important part of the spiritual training, quest, however you want to put it, that you need to do it, you know, in order to really achieve a higher level.
I first went to Latin America. Are you okay?
Yeah.
I first went to Latin America in, I believe it was 1973, and at that point I was studying to either become a diplomat or a funeral director embalmer, funeral as in with an R, funeral. My father was, my grandfather was, and so I wasn't sure which one of those. After being in Latin America, my college studies changed radically. My view of what I wanted to do in my life changed radically. My friends who didn't have those kind of experiences went on and did the kind of things that I was going to do. I don't say their life was valid and mine, but I do say that I'm glad I chose to live the life I live, that I feel my life is rich and full and meaningful, and I got to have experiences and perceive existence in ways that I wish I could help all people to.
Well, in a sense, perhaps you are a diplomat, even though not in the usual sense. You sort of present the world with a lot of information about spirituality.
Thank you very much. That's my prayer and my hope is that if I exist for any reason, it's to, as the traditional shaman path is, it's to be a messenger from spiritual realms, from divine source to the material everyday world, and any of it that falls on your listeners' ears or anyone else that I touch and makes a difference in their lives, I feel blessed to have done that.
Well, I think you do, because you do present an amazing amount of information. And while we're on the topic of information, you have written several books.
I have, and I thank you for the opportunity to pitch them. One that I didn't mention tonight is Spiritual Business, and I have mentioned Magical Blend Magazine, and that's basically the story of how a bunch of creative spiritual pilgrims, artists, poets, writers in San Francisco got together and formed a magazine in my living room in San Francisco, which went on to spin off two other magazines, Natural Beauty and Health and Transitions, and all of them became international, great-selling magazines, and how we used the spiritual tools of Latin America and many traditions to run the business and to have a fun time doing it I think the book covers the first 25 years of the business. So Spiritual Business is available online, Amazon.com, and a number of other, all they have to do is put Spiritual Business, Michael Peter Langevin, and they'll find it. The Secrets of the Ancient Incas speaks, what I tried to do was talk of my experiences in Latin America and translate some of the knowledge that I've been exposed to of the pre-European Incan society and Incan knowledge and put it in very usable terms for people in the Western world. I've been told that people who the book touches actually has changed a number of lives, and for that I'm very thankful. The publisher of that asked me to do a sequel to it called Secrets of the Amazon Shamans, talking very much of my family and my travels in the Amazon and meeting with a number of shamans. I will confess a little bit of it is somewhat fictional because they wanted it to very much reflect the secrets of the ancient Incas, and to do that I had to take different experiences I have had on my own or my family and I have had in different places and to kind of move them to the Amazon. So not 100% of it happened exactly like I wrote it in the book, but enough of it did. That, and the stories have more than have more truth than any. So the fiction is more than just moving the place and tying them all together in a shorter period of time, which on some levels makes it more entertaining and some harder to believe. But Secrets of the Amazon Shaman is supposed to come out and be available at bookstores and online, hopefully before Christmas. But right now, advanced copies are available at Michael Peter Langevin at yahoo.com. They can email me, and they're $18 a piece for advanced copies.
Okay. Sounds like some great books are coming out, and you know, if they're half as entertaining to read as you have been for a guest, they'll be an excellent read.
Thank you so much. I like to think they're that. I've been told they're that. I've been blessed enough to have good editors that allow my personality and my way of talking to translate and storytelling to translate into the books and come across on the written page. They've sold well enough. That they're so much more than most small publishers have the right, most small authors have the right to expect. So they must touch some people in a good place.
Well, that's a good thing. We still have a few minutes, and so, you know, one of the things that everyone is curious about is how to increase their own personal consciousness, their own spiritual awareness. What would be your advice for someone who is on that quest?
You know, we can start as simply as starting to believe in themselves, monitoring their thoughts, because people just don't realize how powerful what they think and say are. Believing that they can create the lives that they want. Turning off electronics one night a week or one day of a weekend a month. And dedicating that time to spiritual practice, whether it's prayer, meditation, ritual, dance, exploring their creative expression, even if they don't think they're creative. We all have some creative. For me, it's usually writing, but for some people it's gardening, for other people it's cooking, for other people it's making pottery or dancing. When we pray, we ask the divine for what we want. When we meditate, we listen to what the divine wants. When we do ritual, we get closer to the divine. When we create, we become one with the divine, because that's what the divine force is. It's the creative force of the universe, whether you call it God or goddess. It's the creative force behind all things, and by doing these simple things and by keeping an open mind to possibilities and tasting different tools, different paths, and seeing what makes a difference in their lives, those are the simple things that are so important, and can I've seen people who actually don't believe in any of the stuff that I live start doing these things almost to prove me wrong, and then watch as their lives evolve and they transcend into a higher way of functioning and living.
You know, a lot of times I think that probably one of the simplest ways to bring a pure spirituality to your life is celebrating life.
Amen.
And the vision I have in my mind is my daughter, when she was a young girl, out in the backyard, and she would just dance for no reason. There's no music, there's no nothing. She's all by herself in the backyard, and she's just dancing away, and just a pure celebration of being alive and being happy.
I was invited over to a friend's house one night this week, and a few of the people that were there had children who were 3, 4, and 5 years old. And my children are 18 and 19 now, and I got to play with these children and to touch their innocence. We were just playing silly games, flying ponies and Polly Pocket and catch the ball and squirt guns, but they're close enough to their pure essence, to innocence, to the creative force of the universe, that they understand that life is a game, that life should be fun. They're so pure that they don't think about how they act is going to affect others as much as how they feel. And that's what comes out right away. We all need to be like young children again. I had such fun playing with these kids for the first time in a long time. And I remembered, you know, it touched the Peter Pan in me. And I think all of us need to retouch that and recapture that so that life is really serious and it's really important. And we can only make the most of it if we laugh at it and enjoy it and sing and dance for no particular reason.
Oh, yeah, exactly. You know, and that's the vision I've always had in my mind. She was probably 10, 12 years old, and she'd be out there just dancing away to the music, I guess, in her own head. And, you know, that what? The pure celebration of life. And, you know, we need that sort of simplicity sometimes.
And again, not to condemn our Western world, I live here, it's benefited me greatly, but weddings and birthday parties and occasional wild time when you're in college or when you happen to get together with old friends are a few times that we're allowed to really do that, where, or encouraged at least, or it's given permission, where in a lot of the third world, especially in the older, more isolated society, everything is a celebration. When a child is baptized, when someone in the village is married, when someone dies, all of that is a wonderful opportunity for everybody to get together with everyone they know and to celebrate that they're alive and that the world exists around them. And those kind of things can be brought back into our day-to-day existence and need to be, because only if we give gratitude for what we have and for what we're going to experience can our life have true meaning.
Sometimes we just get entirely too hung up on the concept of being adult, of being responsible, of being what everyone else expects us to be.
We get lost in it. I love to travel because whenever I leave the United States to go someplace else, I'm broken out of my habit pattern and out of my responsibilities. And whenever I come back, I wonder why I live this way, because everybody doesn't live this way, and we don't have to live this way. And there's so much more meaning, and there's so much more richness, and there's so many other ways to live than we in the United States, even in wild California or New Orleans, live. And we need to be aware of that, to remind ourselves of that, and to find ways to break the spell of our habits and our day-to-day existence. Whether it's shamanism or going out to a mountaintop and praying for UFOs to come and experience their wonder, it exists all around us. All we have to do is take a walk in the woods or in a park or sit in your back lawn at night and you touch something, you remember something that's available for all of us.
Yeah, I used to spend a lot of time camping and very remote areas, and a lot of times, you know, for me, that's what it was all about. It was breaking out of my usual routine. It was about getting away from everyone's expectations of me. When I was out there, it was me and the dog and nature, and, you know, nobody cared what I was doing or how I dressed or if I'd combed my hair that day or whatever.
And I think that's so important. I still, to this day, I mean, 2 weeks ago, I was just too much, and I just said to my wife, I'm taking 2 days and I'm going camping, and I just went someplace I knew nobody would be with my dog, and didn't even set up a tent, just carved out a safe place in California this time of year to have a fire near a stream, and stared at the stars late into the night and remembered who I was and what was important to me, and reconnected with nature and with my true self. And I encourage all of you listeners to find the way that they can do this, to make the time to remember and to reconnect.
Yeah, even such as simple as digging in a flower bed at, you know, by your front step and planting a marigold.
Even,
you know,
sometimes
that's a way to connect.
Even if it's as simple as hugging the people you love or telling them, reminding them that you truly love them. You know, there's a million ways we can do it, except instead we get caught up and we forget. And then it's over. It's too late. And we just have to make ourselves stop and remind ourselves who we are, and what the universe is, and where we want our place to be in it. What when we die, what's going to be important to us the last day of our life? What's important to us now? What do we wish we could do, and how can we do that?
I remember my sister had asked me for some advice a couple of years ago. She was contemplating going back to school to finish her degree, which she wanted to do very badly. But she was concerned because she wasn't going to be able to pay her bills. And there were some of the things involved with going to school that she wanted to do. And I was like, well, you know, look at it this way. You know, 30 years from now, when you're an old lady or however many years it is, and you're sitting in a nursing home with your cronies, and you're saying to them, well, in 2004, I paid all my bills on time. Or you can say, well, look, in 2004, I did this and this and this. And I had a great time, and so what if my electric bill was late?
And that's true. I mean, death is such a wonderful gift for humans, and we don't look at it that way at all. We live in fear of it. If we can transcend that fear and see death as a gift that reminds us to make every moment count, to put everything we have into every moment, that life isn't a dress rehearsal. Every moment is the only one of those moments we get back. And to look at, if this was the last day of our life, what would we do? When I'm on my deathbed, what do I want to remember that I did today? Then all of a sudden, all of our actions take on a whole different meaning. And what we do and what we say and how we act changes radically. And that's, to me, the true essence of what shamanism is and what the UFOs are trying to tell us is that...
Okay. Well, Michael, I hate to say this, but we have reached the end of our time tonight. And I hope you enjoyed the show tonight as much as I did.
I hope you
enjoyed
it, too.
We have a few things I want to mention real fast before we go. There's a new website now, www.gscott.com, where you can read about upcoming shows, past schedules, get some links about past guests. It's still under construction, but the schedule is up for everyone. We won't be airing live shows on our regular broadcast time on Tuesdays for the next 2 weeks, but we will have some live broadcasts from Roswell during the UFO Festival. I'll try to get schedules posted. And on that note, folks, we are out of time, and do stay tuned. The Voice of People with host November Hansen is next.